Welcome to East Meets West, episode 287. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
You certainly are.
I am.
I wonder, you know, somebody last week said, there have been many episodes in which Tom starts by apologizing and then taking back his apology and then explaining what East Meets West is. I guess we do that a lot.
I think we do that a lot because we get emails from, or at least comments from people who's like, well, why don't you show on? Why don't you talk about this? Why don't you talk about that?
Yeah, there's always new people that we have to explain that there is no strategy, there is no premise to this show. I'm actually something. Hold on. No, go ahead. Talk amongst yourselves.
It was born of the idea that we wanted to talk about stuff that was beyond technology, just normal stuff.
But with low pressure. We wanted a low pressure system moving through the app.
Kind of like, and I'm getting weird feedback from me, but I'm not sure if that's...
You're getting weird feedback? Google.
Yeah, I'm hearing a delayed echo of like my voice, but it's kind of garbled.
Is it in your head? I don't hear anything on my end.
It's in my headset, not my head.
But has it gone away now?
No, it's just Google being Google.
All right.
As long as it doesn't affect the recording, it doesn't bother me.
No, apparently it does bother you because you're making a point of mentioning it.
Speaking of things that bother me, I recently, I think still kind of do, I had a pain in my neck. I'm not sure if you've ever woken up one day and kind of stretched as people want to do after a good night's rest. I didn't really have a great night's rest that night. But I did something, and I had one of those weird pinched, inflamed nerves in the upper back, maybe behind the shoulder, where any kind of head, torso, or arm movement causes a very sharp pain. I was like that for a couple of days. Serafina, my coworker and good friend, was yelling at me. They said, go to a chiropractor. It's like, fine. Open up Yelp, find the closest one. Got, you know, plenty of stars, maybe too many stars, I think. But it was interesting because I've never been to a chiropractor.
A lot of people consider chiropractory to be quackery. They say there's no scientific basis for it. I have gone to a chiropractor on a couple of occasions. One, I don't think did anything to help me, and I stopped going. The other one was temporary, but I felt like, and maybe it's a placebo effect, that it actually was helpful.
I will say the first day I visited and he rearranged my spine a little bit or bones or whatever, it worked out. I would have to say eliminated 75% to 80% of the initial pain. Like, so I could actually have more movement of my head and my torso without having the pain. And it wasn't like I was going in there, this guy's going to fix me. I was just like, you know, it's covered by insurance. Here's your $10 copay.
But you know that's not the way the placebo effect works. It's not like you have to believe for it to work. It can work on your subconscious.
No, I totally agree. It definitely, I don't know if it's something is just popping like a joint back in, much like a joint pain. You know, if you crack your knuckles or you crack your back a little bit, you can get kind of that pinching pain. By the way, I don't know if it's something like that. I would have to say it worked out pretty well. He was very insistent on follow-ups. I did like three others, and I was like, you know, I don't have any more time. I get like 30 through my health plan. I get 30 chiropractic visits covered.
Yeah, so he's going to be insistent on 30 visits is what my guess is, because he wants his fee.
Maybe. And I was like, you know, it's cool. It's a little tight at this point, but, you know, I can move. I can do all the things I couldn't do before. I can throw away the cane, and I can get up and testify that I am indeed living a new life.
Were you using a cane?
No. I was going around like Lurch, where I don't turn my head, that's but I turn bad. The torso.
Yeah,
it was. It worked. Although someone brought up to me, and his wife was, or still is, I don't know what they call it. It's a deep tissue masseuse. You know, they do like they specialize.
Deep tissue massage. A deep tissue masseuse would give you a deep tissue massage.
Deep tissue massage. Yeah. And he was saying, it's like, you know, chiropractor, deep massage, is about the same. It's like, hey, you know, it's like, whatever. I just want the pain to go away.
Whatever loosens up your muscles and relieves the pain It works for me. I don't even care if it's a placebo effect. If it works, placebo effect is an excellent painkiller.
As long as I, you know, and I've always wondered, you know, more recently, I've noticed that a lot of, because we just had, for some reason, my particular company has gone through three different healthcare and benefits programs for some reason.
Looking for the cheap one. That's my guess.
I noticed that my particular current plan, I use HMO through Blue Shield, supports a lot of these alternative medicinal approaches, be it like aromatherapy. I'm not a big believer in aromatherapy, but it's covered. They also do acupuncture, which I find astounding, because traditionally those used to be kind of hard to get covered because people think you really consider it to be legitimate medicine.
My health plan in the 90s was from a bookstore, and it covered acupuncture and chiropractic. I think chiropractic was probably covered. I never used it, but it was probably covered at Tech TV too. CNET, I think, had it. Current health plan doesn't.
I'm wondering if it's viewed more as kind of like a gym membership. You know, it's something that doesn't cost more than, say, like, you know, instead of you going to a doctor and ringing up that cost, you go to something a little lower tier that could potentially solve the problem and not cost the insurance as much money.
That's an interesting idea. It could be that. It could also be just the idea that there is some competition to get corporations and businesses to buy health plans. And so if in California, that a company feels like it would have a better time recruiting talent if they can stress that, hey, our health plan covers aromatherapy and acupuncture. If that's attractive to their prospective employees, then they might be willing to plunk down for that sort of health plan. That could be an element of it as well. I don't know.
And I'm kind of glad that it's a little broad range to include, you know, non-traditional therapies. You know, I'm not a big believer in homeopathy, not to offend people who are listening that do. I just never seen it really work. Because I've known people who've tried it and just like, yeah. But you know, things like my uncle was very involved in trying to get it, integrated into the kind of health wellness, you know, in the state of California. You know, if it works for people, I've had an old waitress with my dad who had to take her then husband up to see an allergist, because every season he would just get this, like, literally season long allergy where he couldn't just breathe through his nose. It's just everything just filled up, and it was like he was permanently cold for like four. He had a permanent cold for 4 months out of the year. It was miserable. He couldn't work. He couldn't work as well because, you know, your head's all congested. And the allergist suggested going to an acupuncturist, which is kind of weird. And he went to it, and it actually at least mitigated the symptoms that he was suffering. And he was like, oh, my God, now I don't feel like, you know, I got two giant, you know, things plugging up my nose. I can breathe normally. I can do stuff. And he was like, oh, no, I'm a total believer.
Well, you know, and the thing with all of these alternative medicine, Eastern medicine, and other non-traditional medical approaches, and frankly, a lot of the traditional medical approaches fall into what I'm about to say as well. It's like it's akin to wiggling the antenna to see if you can improve the reception. You know, it works sometimes, so you try it, and sometimes it doesn't work, and sometimes it does, and you're not exactly sure why. I mean, you can't really track down the exact scientific reason why turning the antenna that way improved the reception. It's not much of a modern day analogy, I know, because we don't have antenna as often, but maybe with a radio, same sort of thing, where it's just we're fumbling around, and we're like, hey, sometimes acupuncture seems to alleviate these symptoms. You can decide that it's because of chakras and the chi if you want. That doesn't scientifically explain anything. Maybe there's some scientific reason that we'll discover that is more of a reliable and reproducible result to it. But for now, it's like jiggling the antenna, and if it works, it works.
Yeah, and I really appreciate the chiropractic treatment. not sure I would go for the extended plan once the immediate issue is solved, because at some points it's like, you know, you're pushing against my body in a way that I don't think it was normally designed to do. You know, and it's one of those things. It's that you like to be a believer and stuff, but sometimes you're just like, you know,
you want to believe, don't you?
Yeah, it's like, you know, when you like aromatherapy. I mean, come on. I'm sure certain things can affect your disposition, smells or whatever. But I'm wondering if it has to do something with more of the chemical makeup of whatever's, you know, you're smelling. But
well, why does it matter if it does? I mean, it's just like the chiropractor.
That's true. But you know, I mean, at what point, if
it's just like, it's actually more like acupuncture. Chiropractor has, you could sort of imagine a medical reason why moving the bone structure might realign it and make things feel better and relieve pressure and stuff. I don't know if that's true, but it's easy to put your head around. Whereas acupuncture, it's like, well, if it's not moving the chi around and blocking channels, then how does it work? It's less obvious how it might work mechanically or physically. And aromatherapy is kind of the same way. Like, it might work anyway. Like you say, it might just be a chemical reaction or a stimulation of certain nerve centers of the brain because of an olfactory stimulation. That wouldn't be too different than acupuncture.
Yeah. You know, and it's again, I'm not dissing anything. I'm actually really curious to see what everyone else's opinions and their experiences with it, because, you know, it's, at least in my age set, my cohort group, there's a lot of people who've done it. But I've always wondered about people who are older or younger, or individuals who are younger, more likely to see, you know, a chiropractor off the bat rather than go to a doctor, which is something like, you know, my cohort is like, well, I'm going to go to the doctor and he's going to tell me what's wrong. Give me a couple of, you know, a prescription for Vicodin or something and tell me to, like, take it easy.
The knock on chiropractic specifically is that a lot of people feel that it is not rigorously proven to be medically beneficial, that it's not as scientifically rigorous in demonstrating why and how it works. The positive with chiropractic is that it does work for many people. It's demonstrably helped people. And again, whether that is through some jiggling the antenna effect or a placebo effect, or the chiropractors are right and the realignment of the muscles and the skeleton help relieve pressures that make you feel better. It hasn't been as rigorously proven as a lot of people would like, but there's something to it. No doubt about it.
Or people wouldn't be going to it still.
Yeah.
Or that, or they just have one.
Well, I mean, it's that statement I take issue with, because still use astrology, and lots of other things that are definitely demonstrably proven not to work, but people still believe in them.
I think I understand your point of view. We'll take astrology.
I'm willing to say not all astrology. I'm talking about the astrology that you see kind of in the paper. That's bargain basement astrology.
But I would argue and stuff like that, that's less about people defining their lives than just kind of a fun thing to do.
Well, it's for some people, maybe. Other people like totally rely and believe on it. All I'm saying, and maybe astrology is a good example, maybe it's not, but people believing in something and continuing to do it, even though it produces no results, is not an unusual thing.
Have you ever had your palm read?
Yes.
I've had it read 3 times, and I've always gotten the same answer for 3 different people. So I'm wondering if there's just like a standard kind of guidebook. Like, okay, this guy's like this.
Yeah, you didn't check that out from the library, the palm reading guide?
Yeah.
Hey, we got an email from our first listener. Remember Jason?
Yes.
Listener number one, the person we said, you email us, we're not going to give an email address out. Everybody else has to post on the blog, but if you email us, we'll read your email. He wrote in. We haven't heard from him in a long time. Said he just listened to East Meets West for the first time in ages as he tuned into episode 285, where we talked about currency and the Audible book on behavior. He said, I've been reading Francis Fukuyama's The Origins of Political Order from pre-human times to the French Revolution, as well as lots of classics of political theory from Hobbes, Locke, Marx, Mill, and Rousseau, plus a handful of contemporary scientists such as Dan Gilbert, Dan Ariely, Jonah Lehrer, and Steven Pinker. He says, it's interesting how we as humans assign value to currency and why the discussion on national debt seems to be asinine, as money is a construct and does not represent actual wealth. My thesis, though, might be something you would be interested in, as I will argue the European Union is enabling sub-state national groups such as the Scots, Catalans, and Basques in their quest for significant autonomy and independence because traditional state borders in Europe are meaningless with a common currency, free movement of goods, services, and labor, and subsidies from the EU that enable states or regions to enact EU directives.
I would agree with that, although one could also make the argument is that you're just moving from one nation, one traditional nation-state structure to a much larger one, where in the same way, say, like a county in California no longer wants to be within the California rule book. It doesn't want to be subject to California law, so it becomes its own state. By becoming its own state, it can do a lot of, it can enact certain laws, taxation, and all that. But it would still be part of the United States, and therefore still subject to federal law and federal obligation in terms of, you know, tax collection.
The hard thing to make the comparison to the United States is that we don't have nearly as many, and certainly not in the same way, ethnic regions. Hawaii yes. being a significant exemption to that, but in the contiguous 48 states, for sure, there is not a homeland for people. There are lots of Native American reservations. Most of those are not in the native area where those people originally resided. Some of them are, especially out west, but a lot of them aren't. And they're very small, and they don't make up large areas. You could see maybe Apaches having enough concentration of people and enough political influence to eventually maybe push for home rule. Hawaiians have achieved a measure of home rule in Hawaii, but again, the borders are Hawaii there, so it's a lot easier to deal with because it's islands. I don't think we have the same pressure, you know, with those few exceptions that you have in Europe, where you have Catalans and you have Basque country and you have Scotland, and those are very traditional, long-suffering minorities that are finally, you know, getting a little attention. And I think Jason has a really good point. They're getting that attention because it's not as important to maintain hegemony within your nation when you actually have a larger entity responsible for your foreign policy, for your economy,
your welfare.
And so you've given up a little measure of that nationality. If you can negotiate a way that Spain is still Spain, but there's a Basque home rule area and there's a Catalan home rule area. I mean, and if England is like, well, England's still England and Britain's still Britain, why not let Scotland have a parliament? It makes a lot of sense to me.
I've not argued that it would be a logical conclusion. I would argue that the U.S. is too young. I would say give it 500 years. And then when regions develop, when there is a buildup enough of a legacy of a historical, you know, a sense of a historical
entitlement. What would that coalesce around?
But see, that's the thing. I don't know what it would be. I doubt it would be.
I think it
along
might take more than 500 years. That's all I'm saying.
I don't think it would actually be along traditional ethnic kind of ties. It could very well be along linguistic and religious beliefs, or at least
maybe religious. I don't see. Well, linguistic, like a Spanish speaking yep. area, could happen. Okay, I can see that. Maybe French and Maine. It's pretty small.
It doesn't have to be big. I don't think. You know, a region can be
right.
I mean, even Appalachian,
Louisiana, Cajun.
Yeah.
None of these are large enough right now, and none of them are cohesive enough. There really isn't. They're on the wane. I guess that's what I'm reacting to. The Cajun areas in Louisiana were much stronger in the past than they are now. But I guess it could be a revival.
A good part of that is just, you know, believe it or not, is the interstate system and how easy it is to move from one location to another.
Well, I mean, that's something in Europe now, too. It's easy to move around Europe. The borders are easier to cross. So it's less of a worry if you say, oh, yeah, let Catalan home rule happen. It's not like all the Catalans are there anyway.
I mean, we've touched on this before. I mean, the bigger question is, you know, if you remove the traditional nation state, city state, any sort of state, what will people tie their allegiance to? Do they tie it to whichever government at the time is providing their particular set of benefits, welfare, and well-being? Or will it be something, you know, more traditional? Will it be some sort of ethnic, linguistic, or historical? Like, hey, we've always lived around here, and we've always lived like this, so that's what we're going to do, even though it's, you know, 600 years later. I mean, the human psyche is a very complicated thing, but the need for identity, belonging, is incredibly strong. And, you know, it seems kind of odd to say this, but I think, remember that 70s or early 80s movies, The Warriors, the one with all the gangs in it?
No, I don't know that.
So it was taken from, it was basically an adaptation of the Greek story, I think, of what was it? Which Greek army trying to fight its way back out of Xerxes, Persia? And they just kind of adapted it. It was based on, it was written into, adapted into a book and then made into a movie. In any case, all these gangs are there and they have their allegiances to each other and to their block, to their neighborhood. And that's how they, decide amongst themselves who they belong to and what their identity is. It wouldn't be far reaching to say that at some point people will maybe not to their block, but perhaps say like all the hipsters. They believe that they belong to a grouping, a natural grouping. Yeah, we all like this. We all like that. We all dress this way. We all, you know, we all have a particular speech pattern. And you kind of see it right now.
I mean, most people in Lower Haight and the Mission. So we have a region to defend.
Until they have a new mission. After the old one gets destroyed, they're rebuilding called New Mission.
New Mission. Missionia. No, I know what I get what you're saying though. You know, seriousness. So you kind of have beliefs that people rally around in place of ethnicity, and I think that's absolutely possible. I think it's easier to rally around ethnicity or language or religion, but in a way, some of those beliefs are substitutes for religion. They can be as unifying as religion. I mean, I've seen people religiously devoted to open source or music genres or video games. And that seems not as powerful now, but who's to say that it might not become that powerful in the future? All the Warcraft, all the horde players of Warcraft band together in some way. That's definitely possible. I think it's more likely though in the United States that it happens along some sort of either religious or linguistic line. I think those are your best bets. Especially in the Southwest, there could be a regional movement around Spanish-speaking peoples. It doesn't even have to be Latino. It could just be Spanish-speaking peoples of all different kinds. We roughly call that Latino anyway. And I think in certain religious areas, either in the South or in the Midwest, those are smaller enclaves, but that could happen. I kind of posit that in one of the novels I wrote. But I really think you need an invasion to make it happen. I mean, when you think about Scotland and Wales and even Cornwall, they exist because they were on the fringes when the Angles and Saxons came in. And England is where the Angles and Saxons successfully drove everyone else out. So I don't know if it has to be a war in that manner, but I think there has to be something of an invasion. And in a way, that's why the linguistic paradigm appeals to me the best, because there has been an invasion of English speakers into the Spanish speaking area. And they've been a subject people in the Southwest of the United States.
Well, in conflict, I think there will be conflict. I don't necessarily war where it breaks down to violence, but conflict, perhaps politically, socially, you know, you have a sort of self, and you see this already in many larger cities. You kind of have an ethnic self-segregation where people fall back into a community that they feel best represents them or they feel comfortable in.
I don't think fall back. I think it's where they start when they're new.
And so it's, you know, ultimately, if I were a cynical person, I would say everything would be cyclical. That's,
but you are.
Don't roll your eyes. Person.
Aren't you a cynical person?
I am.
Okay.
I think the idea of an ethnic racial identity will come back again. Maybe not within the next 10, 20 years, but I mean, there's enough there and it's strong enough.
Wait. You say come back. It hasn't gone.
Come back. When I say come back in popularity. In other words, currently it's considered to be, here we are. So it's currently, at least in polite modern American society, that, you know, racial ethnic differences aren't something to harp about, but rather to be enjoyed and celebrated. Yes or no?
Okay. Enjoyed and celebrated. Gotcha. I'm with you. Unless you're white. You can't celebrate being white,
yeah.
But any other ethnicity. And that's why white people are always like, I'm French, I'm Irish, I'm German, I have a little Filipino. And, well, you know, they try to latch onto that because they want to be part of the party and say, yeah, I'm celebrating my ethnic heritage. Okay, I'm with you. So what's going to come back?
I can,
ethnic strife?
No. I think once you lose, and this happened in the Soviet Union, is when you lose that overarching kind of government support or system where, you know, your welfare was somehow taken care of. You fall back to the nearest, I think, thing, which is your family, and that part of your larger family would tend to be of a particular, you know, ethnic or cultural persuasion. So, for example, my family, right? Say something happens to the U.S. government and there's no longer any sort of law and order. But you're giving me a strange look.
Because I'm not quite I'm not quite sure where you're ending up, but I'm willing to listen to where you're going with this.
And so say the federal government dissolves and, you know, there's no longer any kind of rule of law. What would you immediately do to kind of form a community? You would form it around people you know and friends or family, which is probably more like friends or family.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that for some people that the concept of family identity will also move on to a standard ethnic identity.
Sure.
Like go regress back. And so not now, but I'm saying in the future, if there were ever to happen, as you see in the Balkans during Yugoslavia, everyone kind of retrenched back into their old divisions, you know, instead of being, I'm Yugoslavian, I am now Bosnian. I am now, I'm Serbian. I'm whatever. Croatian. I can totally see that happening again. If something were to happen
in the United States, you're saying that would happen.
It would have to be an incredibly socially disruptive event. It wouldn't be something that would. You're giving me a weird look.
I don't think it could. I get what you're saying, and it absolutely makes sense, especially with the Yugoslavian analogy, right?
Yeah.
But we don't have that kind of history that Yugoslavia had. There was a history of Bosnian Serbs and Muslims, and there was a long history of being this area is a Serbian area, this area is a Croatian area. We don't have that. I mean, the mission used to be Irish, and now it's Spanish or Hispanic, and it's being invaded by hipsters. And we're too homogenous for there to be that kind of strife. But I think you're on to something, because you're right. I mean, I totally follow you in the, like, oh, we retreat into our communities. And in a lot of cases, our communities are more homogenous than the greater population. So maybe Koreatown becomes like an armed camp in L.A. and Chinatown I don't know if there's enough critical mass for a large area to do that in the U.S.
I think you're looking at it to a post-apocalyptic. It's not going to be Mad Max where everyone's out for themselves, so to speak.
Okay.
But it would be very, and it wouldn't be tied necessarily geographically. I mean, Koreatown would have to be the nexus for all the Koreans. It could be someplace else, somewhere place where everyone could get to, but at the same time find.
Well, if it's post-apocalyptic, why do they have to go somewhere? If it's not post-apocalyptic,
but all right. So it, let me just say, people naturally gravitate. So, for example, if there was a great, you know, go back to my great cataclysm, a very well-spoken, a very visionary and persuasive Korean-American decides, like, I'm going to make a home where all Korean-Americans can feel comfortable. It won't be like in L.A. or Korea. It will be in this patch of, you know, empty ground up in the foothills. Come join me if you want to relive, you know, the Korean-American dream.
Okay.
Or the greatness. And you would have people, you know, basically go up there and, you know, it's not, I'm not trying to make it as kind of an ominous.
And by the way, Koreans in the audience, we're not picking on you. We just happened to pick that as an example.
No,
we're
I am
particularly susceptible to that.
Because you brought up Koreatown.
Well, exactly.
It's not meant to be malevolent. It's just saying, you know, someone said like, hey, you know,
I don't think that would be the norm though. I think it would happen. I think you're right. I think probably the biggest example of it would be white supremacists would boom in a time period like that, because people who might not normally take the risk of identifying themselves in that way, but maybe have some secret inklings that are sort of sympathetic to extreme philosophies like that in a situation like you're describing of lawlessness, might get pushed into joining that sort of thing. And I could see that. And so I could see other ethnicities, Latinos and African Americans and lots of different ways collecting. But I think there'd be lots of other collections that wouldn't be based on race.
I agree. Yeah. I don't think it would be solely, but I think that would be the biggest one. But people would also, and I fully agree that people would follow along communal, or not communal, but shared beliefs, be it political. For example, like, say, a bunch of, who are those people that run the Rainbow Grocery Co-op? So someone like, you know, a very hippies? Kind of left-wing hippies, you know, hippies have gotten together.
So they travel around. I'm not sure that this is a useful analogy, because all you're saying is that in the unlikely event that all law and order breaks down entirely, which has happened in history, but it's very pretty rare, that we would break up into separate communities based around common beliefs. And I think that's almost a tautology. All you're saying is society
almost
will break down and it'll reorganize in other ways.
Well, that's what I say. It's just like society. No. I say at some point it will happen again. I mean, it doesn't have to be like
happen
the total
again. It's never happened in the U.S.
The Depression.
We didn't break into ethnic societies in the Depression.
I always thought we did.
Describing right now. There weren't like Koreans in the foothills.
It's really hard. I'm not saying like it's going to be a weird Mad Max kind of planet. But I honestly believe that people will eventually just kind of migrate to where they feel most comfortable. And the thing is, it doesn't have to be.
But I think that's always true.
It doesn't have
I think
to
that's
be.
That's already true.
It doesn't have to be this enormous like world ending event. It just has to be bad enough where people don't feel secure in their current.
I think that's you're describing the current state in a way. If you're like, well, it's not Mad Max, it's not post-apocalyptic, it's not that bad. People already feel unsafe and uncertain and insecure about the economy and their safety, and they already flee to the suburbs to be with people like themselves and get away from the strange others, or into, you know, hipster areas where like-minded folks are around and they can hang out in coffee shops. And these are my kind of people. And we travel and move to other cities where we're trying to find the
Burning Man. That's a good description.
Yeah, Burning Man too. Yeah. All right.
I think that's what the future is going to look like. It's going to look like communities of Burning Man.
The future will look like Burning Man. You've heard it here first on East Meets West, episode 287. That's all we have to say. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. You can make your comments at subbrilliant.com/EMW, as always. And we will be back sometime with another episode. Thanks, Roger.
Bye.
podcast is part of the Frog Pants Studios Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.